You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And at 11:11 a.m. on this day, 11:11, in 1972, Louise and I got married. But most importantly, it's Veterans Day. Welcome, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Our first hour, of course, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Bernie Sanders with our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. His website is sanders.senate.gov. Somehow we got that wrong on the screen. Bernie, welcome.
Good talk.
It is Veterans Day.
It is.
And you are on the Veterans Committee.
I am.
So what's up with...
So let's begin by thanking all of the listeners who have served their country, and we appreciate very much their service. Let me just mention a tragedy that just took place right here in my hometown of Burlington, Vermont, yesterday. A young veteran, is based on news reports at least, we think he was 35, took his own life in a very public way. And what is happening in our country is a lot of young men and women are coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan. Some of them are trying to deal with PTSD or TBI, very tough illnesses. And on top of that, they're walking into the middle of a recession where it's hard for anybody to get a job. And if you have some disabilities, it's that much harder. So there's a lot of hurt out there among our veterans, and this is an issue that some of us are working very, very hard on. How do we reach out and provide the services that the veterans need, the health services, financial services, and perhaps most importantly, how do we get them back into the workforce, which would help in many cases.
Yeah.
Further, in terms of veterans' needs, we have made some progress in recent years in expanding and improving health facilities. In the state of Vermont, for example, we've opened up two new what we call community-based outreach clinics. These are primary health care clinics that are very, very effective in treating veterans. We're expanding a bunch of others, and this is happening all over the country. So we got a long way to go to make sure that, veterans get the benefits and services they were promised. We are making some progress. And I think maybe lastly and most importantly, the good news is that our soldiers are coming home from Iraq, long overdue, and now we've got to stop bringing them home from Afghanistan as soon as we can.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, a very important issue. Second issue is I think it's important for all of us to reflect upon what happened in Tuesday's election in Ohio and other states of this country. In my view, what happened in Ohio was one of the most significant working class victories that we have seen politically in this country in many, many years. And what happened is the unions, the police, firemen, teachers, public employees got together and worked with non-human union people and said, this is not only an issue of defending the right of public employees to collectively bargain their contracts. What this is about is whether we're going to continue to see the decline of the middle class. Is it in fact true that the teachers, the firemen, the police officers are the real problem in our economy? Or should we be focusing our attention on the 1% and begin to address those issues? And I think that message resonated all across the state, and they won a landslide victory, 62%. Interestingly enough, you and I, Tom, have talked about this horrendous Citizens United Supreme Court decision.
Mm-hmm.
Citizens United, that organization, got involved in this campaign, obviously on the side of the governor there, and the effort to destroy collective bargaining. And we beat Citizens United in Ohio on Tuesday, and we got to keep that pressure going so that we defeat that absurd Supreme Court decision. By the way, my voice is a little bit shaky. I'm dealing with some bronchitis here, so.
You're sounding pretty good.
Okay. Now, the Tuesday election, which was a major working class victory, takes us to the work that the Super Committee is doing right now. And I got to tell you, as an independent sitting in the Democratic caucus, there is a whole lot of debate going on. And here's what the debate is going on. You got some people in the caucus who I think are absolutely misreading the tea leaves, who think that they should read some kind of complicated convoluted compromise with Republicans where there may be possibly some revenue. We don't know exactly where it's coming from. Not necessarily from the wealthy, not necessarily from large profitable corporations. You can get revenue from the middle class and working class as well. But implicit in the agreement that the Republicans would want would be cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And I think the Democrats have got to understand that if the Democratic Party means anything, they have got to stand tall on those issues and say, no, we're not going to push the elderly under the bus, nor are we going to cut Medicare and Medicaid when you got 50 million people today without any health insurance. Here's the political reality of the moment, in my view. What the American people are saying, every poll that I have seen, plus what happened on Tuesday, is they are rejecting big time right-wing extremism. Very few people in America believe what the Republican leadership believes, that you give more tax breaks to the rich when the wealthiest people are becoming phenomenally rich, that you protect corporate loopholes when you have some major corporations making billions in profit, not paying a nickel in taxes, and then you do that while at the same time you try to destroy Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. You go out on any street corner in any state in America, and if you find 10% of the people say, yeah, that makes sense to me, tax breaks for billionaires, destroy Social Security and Medicare, I will be shocked.
Mm.
The Republican ideology today, that right-wing ideology, is a fringe ideology. And the Democrats have got to stand up and say, sorry, we're not going along with you. We have a different approach to a deficit reduction. We are going to ask the wealthiest people to start paying their fair share. We're going to do away with these corporate loopholes. We're going to take a hard look at military spending. We're going to bring our troops home from Afghanistan. I'm on the budget committee. We worked on a budget. $4 trillion deficit reduction, no cuts in Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. It can be done. So the debate within the Democratic caucus, and I hope everybody writes to their senator, writes to their House member, is to hang tough on this. Now, if no agreement is, now my view is, I would like to see an agreement. I would like to see the Democrats bring forth a strong, progressive position. I would love to see the Republicans say, okay, we've got it. You're right. I doubt it will happen. I hope it would. I doubt it will. And if it doesn't, then you go to what's called sequestration, cuts across the board. But the point is, I think, if the Democrats hold true and stand with the working class of this country who are behind the positions I'm articulating to you, they will win. Not only in November will they win, they can win a major, major victory. I think you're at a tipping point.
And if they fail to, they've lost the major differentiator between them and the Republicans.
Exactly. Then, you know, my suggestion was, literally, to the Democratic leadership, simply change the name of the party from the Democratic Party to the Republican Light versus Republicans. And say, yeah, we're bad, but we're not as bad as these guys.
You actually said that.
But the point is, what Tuesday was about is to say that when you stand tall, you bring people together. They won in Ohio. They just won. Win. They won an incredible landslide.
Right.
And that's the kind of politics we have got to engage in. And your point is right. If the Democrats suddenly become on the bandwagon, oh, well, we're going to, very complicated, yeah, we're going to have to cut the CPI for Social Security, maybe raise the age for Medicare eligibility, they will lose. People do not want the Republican ideology, but they want the Democrats to stand tall and differentiate themselves from this right-wing nonsense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the power of standing for your convictions,
right,
as you do so well. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, picking up your calls for Bernie right after this. 15 minutes past the hour. Brunch with Bernie on Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And check out Bernie's website at sanders.senate.gov as well. It's a great news source, as well as there's links to his Facebook page and a great newsletter you can subscribe to. Taking back the mainstream media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's our Brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, and our national town hall meeting. Brunch with Bernie, taking your calls. Marvin in San Diego, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen.
I have been very happy to hear about Senator Sanders and his investigation of the Federal Reserve that he is going to be going into. And I have two quick questions on that. The first is, will he be delving into the question of who really owns the Fed, and is it as federal as Federal Express, as some people say? And the other one is this, will he be delving into this this kind of arcane question of how money is created and whether, in fact, the very act of creating dollars puts the American people into some sort of debt? And I'm also very interested in whether he's touching base with Dennis Kucinich in the House, who has a bill 2990, which in fact says nationalize the Fed.
Well, let me tell you what we are doing, Marvin. Thanks for the questions. The Fed is an extraordinarily powerful agency of government, and most people really have very little understanding of its structure and its function. But let me give you some examples of what power is about. In the Dodd-Frank bill, I managed to get an important provision in which did two things. Number one, it asked for a GAO audit of the Fed during the financial crisis of a few years ago. What we learned, which was really quite incredibly shocking, but gives you an insight into what goes on in the Fed, is that while everybody was paying attention to the bailout that Congress voted, the $700+ billion, the real story was at the Fed. No one knew anything about it. Over a relatively short period of time, Bernanke and friends lent out at zero or very low interest rates $16 trillion. Tom, you got that?
Yeah. The GDP of the entire United States is only $15 trillion.
That's right. Now, it's a revolving loan, so a lot of the money went out quickly, came back quickly.
Right.
But it was a total. Now, who got it? Every major financial institution in America, some major corporations like General Electric, some wealthy individuals got some help,
wow,
and central banks all over the world, including in the Middle East and elsewhere. This was done, $16 trillion was done in total secrecy, and very few people were involved in that decision-making process. Now, if I brought up an amendment that I wanted $1 billion for heating assistance for states around the country so people don't go cold in the winter, you'd have an eight-hour discussion on the floor of the Senate. This is $16 trillion. Nobody knew anything about it. Number two. What we asked the GAO report was to do an investigation about conflicts of interest at the Fed. The truth is, and I think maybe Marvin is making this point, is the Fed itself is the embodiment of conflict of interest. One of the goals of the Fed is to protect the financial stability of our country and of the large banks. But who are the people who sit on the regional banks, the New York Fed, for example? They are the bankers themselves, and they elect the president of the regional feds. So you have the absurd situation where the people who are regulated are doing the regulating. And if that's not a couple of pictures, I don't know what is. So what we are looking at, Marvin, are two things. Number one, how do you create a Fed which is more democratic, responds to the needs of the American people and not just Wall Street and big banks? How do we make sure that the Fed fulfills its mandate to do everything it can to fight high unemployment, to protect consumers? And what kind of structure does the Fed need? For example, the president appoints the board of governors of the Federal Reserve, Bernanke and the others. Should the president, with the approval of the Senate, appoint the presidents of the regional feds? Probably so. Probably so. But that's an issue we are now talking to economists about. Second issue is, in the midst of this terrible recession, why isn't the Fed showing the same type of urgency to protect working people that they did to protect Wall Street? And what tools and policies should they implement to do that? So, Marvin, those are kind of the issues that we're looking at right now.
That's amazing. The Fed actually I'm blown away. Tom, in Waterloo, Iowa, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, Senator, and shout out to all our veterans across America. I was listening to Victoria's report on Tom's show yesterday, and did I hear correct that Clarence Thomas will be brought before an ethics hearing sometime next spring? And if so, is this hearing the product of the letter that was being circulated around Congress calling for that action?
I don't recall her reporting that, but do you know something about that, Brian?
I honestly don't, Tom. I apologize.
Yeah, I don't either. Bill in Seattle. Hey, Bill, you're on with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, my question is, why is leaving thousands of contractors behind in Iraq and Freddie Prinze, why leaving those guys behind in Iraq is getting out of Iraq? Because we're not getting out of Iraq.
Well, yes and no. When you're bringing home many, many, many thousands of troops, that's getting out of Iraq. Your point is that it's not 100% removal. I don't think you ever, well, I don't know, I can't say that definitively. I think there will be some troops remaining to protect the embassy. They will probably have some troops in the area in the event of emergencies. But I feel good that we have made progress in bringing home the overwhelming majority of our troops.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Your opportunity to put your question before a United States Senator. Senator Sanders, and be sure and check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. There's an enormous amount of great information there. They update it, every hour or three, and links to his Facebook page as well and things like that, and his newsletter, the Bernie Buzz, that you can get.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
You can also drop by tomhartman.com and participate in our live free chat room, which runs 24/7. And, of course, our blogs and message boards, TomHartman.com. America. 34 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. And, Bernie, you're still with us?
I'm right here.
Okay. And Vic in Pittsburgh, Missouri, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. I just want to say thank you so much for being a senator, and such. I wish they could just clone you.
Thank you.
First off, I want to just ask a simple question. I'm a veteran, and my heart goes out. I just want to make a statement first that my heart goes out to you guys as far as what you do. And I watch your eight-hour thing that you stood on the floor of the Senate. Second, I just want to make another statement that my heart goes out to all the veterans and the veteran that took his life. I, too, suffer from depression, and I know what it's like. It's hard. It really is hard. I just want to make this one statement, though. I feel like they're pitting the fact that they passed something for the veterans. I feel like they've taken that, and they've used that as a tried to divide the veterans against the people. It should be for all the people, not just for the veterans.
You're talking about the tax break for hiring veterans?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Vic, first of all, thanks for calling. And let me just reiterate this so that everybody understands it. Our soldiers who served in Iraq and Afghanistan did some very, very difficult service there. These are very tough wars. People are on their toes 24 hours a day, explosions going off all over the place. A lot of folks coming back with traumatic brain injury. They're coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder. And these are both very difficult diseases to diagnose and, in fact, to treat. And then they're coming back to the States where there's a recession going on. Maybe they left with a job and they came back without a job. And when you have those kinds of pressures, you're going to have marital problems, divorces, and other things. So these are tough times. And Vic, thanks very much for calling and for your service to the country. Vic makes a good point, and I agree with him. I voted for the Veterans Employment Bill yesterday. It's a step forward. It will give veterans who often need the help training and how to fill out applications, do their resumes. Will give them better opportunities to get jobs with the federal government. It will provide tax credits for employers who hire vets, and even more tax credits for those who have vets with disabilities. All that's good stuff. But Vic is right in saying at the end of the day, we are not going to lower in a significant way unemployment among our returning veterans unless we deal with the unemployment crisis in general. And that crisis is profound. It's not 9%. As I've said many times, it's really 16% if you look at the people who are unemployed, underemployed, and those people have given up looking for work. I have been very disappointed and really honestly incredulous that we've brought forth sensible proposals. These are not radical ideas. In the last month, among other things, to rebuild our infrastructure, $50 billion to rebuild our roads, bridges, water systems, tunnels, schools, put a heck of a lot of people back to work, couldn't get a Republican vote. We brought forth a proposal to say, look, in this day and age, it's crazy to be talking about states and cities laying off police officers, firemen, teachers. Let's save those jobs. Couldn't get a Republican vote. And the funding mechanism was sensible. It was a surtax on income of above $1 million. And what you have is the American people feel, yeah, that's the right thing to do. Every poll that I have seen, Republicans feel that. And yet we couldn't get the Republican leadership to budge. So Vic is right. If we're going to put veterans back to work, we're going to have to put all Americans back to work. And while I think what we did yesterday was the right thing, at the end of the day, veterans unemployment is not going to be solved until we deal with the unemployment crisis for all Americans.
Evan, in Boston, Massachusetts, watching on you're watching on Senator Sanders' website?
Yes, sir.
Hey, great. So, Evan, you're on with Senator Sanders.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Well, I am a Vermont native, so I thank you for your service. But I'm calling to ask you a question. I think that you would agree that the Occupy movement protesters are basically the physical manifestation of a lot of the work that you yourself do every day. And so I'd like to know if you have plans or are working to or would commit to basically writing legislation that would protect the Occupy movement protesters and any peaceful protesters from what seems to be heavy-handed, violent attacks from police. Just last night, there was video that came out of Burlington, Vermont, that showed the protests at the Occupy Vermont encampment where they were actually loading tear gas canisters before a local representative stepped in and de-escalated the situation. I am concerned about issues at Occupy Oakland and other cities and municipalities using force and calling upon bizarre rules or laws or reasoning for using such force. And I think,
let me just say this, Evan. In many ways, that law has already been written. It's called the Constitution of the United States and the right of people to freely assemble. Burlington, Vermont, there was the mayor who intervened. And in general, our police force does a pretty good job here, these sometimes difficult circumstances. So to answer your question, do I believe that whether it's occupying the Occupy Wall Street movement or any other movement, people have a right to peaceably demonstrate? The answer is absolutely right. Am I concerned about overreaching on the parts of municipalities and police? Yes, I am. And that is an issue we will – this is more or less a local issue and state issues, not something I get involved in terribly much, but it is something we are monitoring.
Okay. John, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, you're on with Senator Sanders.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say that, you know, Medicare has removed a lot of money from the system already, and they're targeting this system, which is essentially not meeting the needs of a lot of people. It doesn't really pay for the cost of their medicines, hospitalization, and whatnot. And the way that this is all going to shake out, because healthcare is corporatized too. And I was so hopeful when Barack Obama was elected that he was going to remove the profit motive from medicine. Medicine should be practiced as a human need. My CEO makes $1.2 million and he does absolutely nothing. And they're going to hold on to their jobs, their money, and in fact, they already hire more people, and the people at the bedside, like myself, my wife, and many other dedicated people, I've dedicated my life to taking care of people, and it doesn't mean anything, except to the poor people that we're taking care of with less staff, because that's how you make money. If you want to, you know, corporatize healthcare, you make money by having less bedside caregivers,
right.
And you just take that money, you know, that you make
no,
it more
right,
labor
right.
intensive. And so, you know,
I got your question.
Motive needs to be taken out.
You got it, John. Thank you.
And John makes a very important point. I never believed that, you know, Barack Obama was going to come out, for example, for a single payer program. I voted for the health care reform because I think there are a number of things in it that are positive. It substantially expands Medicaid. I put language in that will double the number of community health centers all over America. A lot of money went into disease prevention. A lot of money went into debt forgiveness for doctors and dentists and nurses who were are prepared to serve in underserved areas. A lot of good things in it. Did it get to John's point of addressing the fact that answering the question as to why we are the only country in the industrialized world that A, does not provide health care to all people as a right, and B, why are we spending almost twice as much per person on health care as any other nation, which guarantees health care to all people, and C, with all of that, with 50 million people uninsured, we're spending huge amounts of money, our health care outcomes are not necessarily better than other countries. And I think John put his finger at the root of the problem. And that is, by and large, the function of the American healthcare system is not to provide quality, cost-effective healthcare to all people as a right. Primarily, it is there to make money for the insurance companies and the drug companies and many of the other businesses that function within healthcare. And I agree with John. Until we deal with that issue, you're not going to have universal healthcare and you're not going to have cost-effective healthcare. I hope very much that my state of Vermont will lead the country to a single-payer system, something we're working on with the governor. And if we do it, and if we do it well, which I think we can, I hope it becomes a model for other states and eventually the nation.
How goes the getting that waiver by 2014?
It's going to be a tough fight, but there are things that we can do in addition to that.
At the state level?
Yeah,
we have. We have about 30 seconds before the break. Is why I'm asking.
Well,
I'm bringing another caller on.
I mean, I think one of the points, and John makes this point absolutely correctly, the insanity of our system right now is that if you are really, really sick, you end up going to an emergency room, which will cost 10 times more than going to a community health center, where you could have a medical home and get more systemic care,
right.
Long-term care.
Yeah.
There are so many other wasteful aspects of the system that it is incomprehensible. And that's why we end up spending so much and getting relatively little for what we spend.
Yeah, absolutely. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program, our national town hall meeting with Senator Sanders. Check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you can drop into our chat room and our blogs and message boards and all that kind of thing over at TomHartman.com as well.
Oh, beautiful, far heroes proved in liberating strife.
And best Veterans Day wishes to you and to all of our veterans, all of the people who have served here in the United States. And it is our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders on the line. And Gail in Antelope, California, you are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey there, guys. My question is, I just heard on CNN that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have been approved to receive some very large bonus money. My question is who approves or disapproves those bonuses, and how can we stop that?
Well, that is a very good question, Gail. I didn't see the CNN report, but in general, I'm aware of that. I mean, I think it's fair to say that Fannie and Freddie have not been outstanding performers, and in this day and age, especially with their poor role in terms of the whole housing crisis, the idea that their leadership would be getting significant bonuses is wrong, and that is an issue that some of us will look into.
Joe, in Gordonsville, Virginia, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
How you doing, Tom and Bernie? Bernie, I wanted to thank you for the picture you sent me and my wife anyway. We talk to you almost every day. But my question to you is, if the Super Committee passes some bills for Social Security, to cut Social Security and Medicare, can President Obama veto them? And I'll hang up and wait for your answer.
Thank you, Joe.
Yeah, he can. Where we're at, though, he can veto anything. But in the Senate, there will be no amendments allowed. There will be no opportunity to filibuster. This one, they put rules in that prevent a filibuster. My understanding is, I'm assuming the president can veto anything, and it would take two-thirds to override it, and that's a good point. And you know, we have been working with the White House, working with the Democratic leadership, to just make it very, very clear, stand tall on this issue. Don't cave in.
Okay. Kim in San Francisco, you're on the air with Senator Sanders. Kim?
Hi, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Bernie, basically I want to know, from what I'm reading, who pushed the EU? And from what I can tell,
who pushed
it was Wall Street and
the European Union, the EU.
Yeah.
Right, the EU. It was Wall Street and the bankers. And now that the EU is, you know, it was Wall Street. This was their idea of integrating an economy across a fair trade agreement partners. So now that it's falling apart, who's going to pay? And it seems to be the people and their benefits and their safety net. So this seems similar to what we're going through here in America. And it seems curiously engineered to me, doesn't it?
I don't know the details, and I do not necessarily think that a European Union is a bad idea. But what I do know for a fact is the unbelievable power of Wall Street, not just in the United States of America, but internationally. I mean, what the bailout was about, I mentioned earlier, the Fed helped bail out central banks all over the world. You are living in a very, very tight global finance system. It has nothing to do with just one country. It is all over the world. And if banks in Europe go down, you know, the United States banks from America have invested in those banks, they will be hurt. You're raising, Gail, a profound question that we don't have a whole lot of time to get into. But I think the way I look at it is here in the year 2011, with all of the increases in productivity, all of the technology out there, why is it that in Greece and throughout Europe and in the United States, working people are struggling and seeing a significant decline in their standard of life? What is wrong with the system? Why isn't all of this technology being used to help the middle class, to eliminate poverty, to maybe lower the work week, rather than to bring about, to see us in a situation where so few internationally have so much and so many have so little? So the growing disparity that we're seeing of wealth and income in America is taking place in many, many other countries around the world. And I'll tell you something. I think the Occupy Wall Street is touching a nerve, because this 1% versus 99% is not just an American issue. It is a European issue. And I think people are beginning to wrap their hands around it and try to start addressing it.
Richard in Cave Junction, Oregon. You're on the air with Senator Sanders. We have about a minute and a half to the end of the hour.
Good morning to you, Mr. Sanders.
Richard.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
every time I get in and read the Constitution, I get to thinking about this Orville Norquist thing, and it appears to me that under Article 1, Section 8, where it says Congress has the power to lay and collect taxes, that those people that signed the pledge not to raise taxes have given away their ability to become a congressman, and this sounds almost like an impeachable offense to me. I'll let you answer that, and I'll listen to you. Thank you.
Well, you know, I don't know that it's an impeachable offense. I think it's pretty stupid. And I think when we understand that the percentage of revenue compared to our GDP is the lowest that it has been in many, many decades, and is at the root of why we have a deficit crisis and a large national debt, the idea that these people say, no, we are not going to ask the wealthiest people in this country, whose effective tax rate, Richard,
is the lowest that it has been in many, many years, as Warren Buffett reminds us. So the rich get richer. What they really pay in taxes, their effective tax rate, has gone down. And I think when people sign Grover Norquist's pledge, all they are doing is saying, what we want to do here in Congress is to represent the rich and large corporations. And what we also want to do, because of the deficit crisis, is cut back on Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and the other programs that are life and death to working Americans. Having said that, let me tell you something. We are beginning to see, as a result of, I think, a lot of grassroots activity, some of our Republican friends there getting a little bit nervous about that position. They see the same polls as you do, which say the American people want the wealthy and large corporations to start paying their fair share of taxes.
Yeah. And some Republicans have asked Grover to let them out, and he said no. It's amazing. Senator Bernie Sanders, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us.
Good to be with you.
It's an honor to host this program. Senator Sanders, check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. Anything Goes Friday. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you on Friday. It's Veterans Day, as well as my wedding anniversary. It's 11-11-11, if you're into numerology. I'm sure there's some significance to that. I'm not sure what it is. Louise and I were married at 11-11 a.m. on 11-11, but this is the actual year of 11. So it gets even more 11-y. So anyhow, speaking of numbers, new CBS poll. Who is the Republican who is leading the pack right now? Last we heard it was Mitt Romney. He was like 27%, something like that. Well, at various times it's been Herman Cain. And well, here's the latest numbers. Herman Cain tops new. This from Daily Coast. Herman by Jed Lewinson. Herman Cain tops CBS poll with just 18%. Newt Gingrich ties Mitt Romney with second for 15%. So between the two of them, that would be 30%. This is interesting, particularly when you consider that Herman Cain, the guy who tops the national poll, isn't actually running for president of the United States on the Republican ticket. He has no ground game in any of these states where there's going to be primaries. Maybe he's going to prove that you can win without a ground game, without staff and without people and without, you know, who knows? I think and Newt Gingrich is offering him high praise for the way that he's handled these sexual harassment allegations. This from the guy who married his high school teacher and then had an affair with a staffer and then married her. And it, so anyhow, I guess it's not sexual harassment if you marry the employee, right, or the person who wants to be an employee. But Newt is out there praising him. But maybe what Herman Cain is demonstrating is that it's no longer necessary to have a ground game to win the Republican nomination or any nomination. I mean, Obama in 2008 demonstrated that it wasn't necessary. That it was possible, let me rephrase that, that it was possible to raise enormous amounts of money in non-traditional ways, e.g. the Internet, using electronic newsletters and things like that. Interesting times. The tar sands pipeline has been changed. Nebraska, apparently, Republicans in Nebraska even were objecting to it. That might have something to do with it, although I think those of us who have campaigned so hard to get President Obama to stop it would like to take some credit, too. But, you know, we'll see. And this jobs bill the Senate voted on Thursday to help unemployed vets. Nice start. How about unemployed everybody? Finally, the Oakland Tribune reports that today there will be a march of veterans in support of the two vets. I find it particularly interesting ironic is not even a strong enough word, that the two people who have been most severely injured in the Occupy Oakland movement are both vets. You know, one guy hit in the head with a tear gas canister, apparently fired by police, suffering a brain injury after serving two tours of duty in Iraq without coming back injured. And the other, also an Iraq vet, who had his spleen ruptured by being beaten up by the police. So, go figure. Anyhow, it's Anything Goes Friday. Let's pick up some of your phone calls. Jeremy in Woodland, California. Hey, Jeremy, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, I need someone to help me understand how the Republicans, there's been reported that several Republicans have wanted to be relieved of their signing of the Norquist pledge.
Right.
And I need someone to help me understand how it seems like they're putting the Norquist pledge, it's superseding them signing their pledge to be congressmen or congresspeople to uphold what the United States people want.
Yes, that's a reasonable reading of it, and I think that many of these Republicans who are asking Grover Norquist to take their name off his website. One of them signed the pledge back in 92, right, and hasn't since. They thought they were signing a one-year commitment. Grover Norquist is saying, no, you signed a commitment for all the rest of your life as long as you're serving in Congress. And he's not going to take down their names. And it's getting bizarre. It's getting really bizarre. But I think that, Jeremy, you make an excellent point. And, you know, caller earlier pointed out, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says Congress shall have the right to impose taxes, and they're surrendering that right to Grover Norquist. What? In other words, they ran for election to represent Grover Norquist? Susan in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
My husband is a Second World War II veteran. He's 82 years young. He quit school at 16, was almost killed three times. And our entitlement, which is actually insurance that he paid into his whole life and I paid into my whole life, is to live in poverty on $1,256 a month.
Right.
It really ticks me off that they call this entitlement. We paid for it.
Yep.
And it's time that Congress and Senate, Republicans and Democrats, say it's insurance that we paid for.
Well, that's the name of the act. It was the Social Security. It was the old age retirement insurance.
That.
I don't remember the exact name, but the word insurance is actually in the 1935 bill.
I know that.
Yeah.
So why is it being called entitlement, and why aren't we correcting it every time it's said?
Good point, Susan. I will try to make a better effort. Thank you very much. And you know, contact your members of Congress and say, hey, you know, what's the deal here? Elizabeth in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Elizabeth, what's up?
How are you? Happy anniversary, Tom.
Hey, thank you. And to Louise, especially, for putting up with me all these years.
And Louise, she's the one who's put up with you?
She is. And she actually also basically runs this radio program and TV program, makes it possible. So, yeah.
Well, Tom, you know where I discovered you, ironically, in Oklahoma City on Link TV. So I want to thank you for making your way there. You must have impressed somebody. And I wondered what you were thinking these days about Occupy Portland.
You know, we were talking about this. Go ahead.
And the mayor's move to end it.
Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday on the air. Sam Adams. I mean, I did my show from Portland. Louise and I lived in Portland for 5 years. We just a year ago last month moved out here to Washington, D.C. And I did a local show in Portland as well, which is now ably being done by Carl Wolfson. Not just ably, brilliantly being done by Carl Wolfson. And, you know, I asked Carl his thoughts on it yesterday as well. And I don't want to try and characterize what he said, but my, you know, I don't know Sam Adams like buddies, but I know Sam Adams and I know who he is, and he's a good guy, and he's a progressive, and he's a damn good mayor and a decent man. And the members of the city council, Amanda Fritz, Mr. Fish, I don't remember all their names right off the top of my head, but you know, many of these people I've met at various times or you know, certainly know of, and you know, it's a very progressive city council. One of the problems that Portland is facing is that a significant percentage of the people who are showing up at the Occupy site are homeless people and or drug addicts or alcoholics. And you know, political movements are not designed to do that, to provide social services. And so you've had two drug overdoses there in the last couple of days, and Sam Adams is how do we deal with this? On the other hand, from the point of view of the Occupy folks, they're like, okay, we go indoors, we become invisible. And so it's a real conundrum, and I'm not going to try to offer advice to the folks in Portland about, you know, what they should do. That's not my role. I don't have that right. And I want to acknowledge what a tough decision it's going to be for them, and what I'm sure it was for Sam Adams and for the city council. And I think that there's good intentions all the way around, and hopefully there can be a good resolution to this. Elizabeth, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for your well wishes.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls here on Anything Goes Friday in just a moment, 15 minutes past the hour.
I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Our day to honor our veterans, people who have served in the military, which is no small thing today. And it's actually Armistice Day. It was originally Armistice Day. On November 11th, 1918, I think. I don't have it printed out. I'm pretty sure it was 1918. Anyhow, on November 11th, World War I ended. And they ended it at 11:11 a.m. is when the armistice was signed. And then in the 1950s, I think it was 1954, that Armistice Day was changed to Veterans Day to honor the veterans of World War II as well as World War I and also the Korean War and all of our other wars. So, 1918. I was right. Thank you, Jacob. Kimberly in Portland. Hey, Kimberly, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to, I do live in Portland, and I work right downtown, pretty much right next to the Occupy movement. And so I've been observing the thick of it since the beginning. And, I've supported Mayor Sam Adams since the beginning, and I do agree with him. You know, you walk through there, it's like a petting zoo. People are doing drugs, and we do have a really big homeless problem in Portland. And I'm all for a revolution, you know, but I do agree that next steps need to happen, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So thank you, Kimberly, for weighing in on that. It's, you know, what's the next step going to be? That's a good question. I don't pretend to know the answer to that. Ursula in Birmingham, Alabama. Ursula, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that the lady that called about entitlements,
saying that we should call it
entitlements.
Mm-hmm.
They are entitlements because we are entitled to them.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because there's two sides to this. One is the one that you're presenting, which is, damn it, I am entitled to that. And the other is that the Republicans have succeeded in saying, hey, these people think they're entitled to everything, you know, and they use entitlement as a slur, as a curse word, the way that they used to use the word liberal, or they still do, but it doesn't stick like it did before. I mean, there was a period in American politics where Democrats were afraid to even use the word liberal.
Yeah, well, let's take back the word.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, I got it. I'm with you, Ursula. Take back the word entitlement, because damn it, we paid into it. We're entitled to get our benefits back out, and this is something that we the people did for we the people. Annie in Front Royal, Virginia. Annie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling about Grover Norquist's pledge,
mm-hmm.
and I believe that it's just completely illegal because I don't think, and I believe I remember reading in the formation of the laws and stuff, that you cannot encumber elected lawmakers.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, that's not anything in the Constitution. That would be a state law,
well,
or
no,
is there a federal law?
It was like in the writings, yeah. Not out of a district. In other words, he can't he doesn't have an office here, and his organization is not founded here.
Mm-hmm.
So in my community, if he he cannot get my lawmakers to pledge something, because you cannot deem to even foresee things that will happen in the future.
Right.
And so to get them to sign a pledge, you encumber, if you will, the lawmaker, and that's illegal. That's against my rights.
You know, there's also there's also something in the Constitution, and I'm looking to see. Yeah, here it is. It's the Supremacy Clause, which is Article 6, which says this Constitution, the laws of the United States, which have been made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which are so bloody under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges of every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of the state to the contrary notwithstanding. And the senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution.
Well, their constitution, but also to in support of their area.
Right, but this constitution says that Congress has the right to raise taxes.
Oh, yes.
So by signing Grover Norquist's pledge, they're basically saying that they're anti-pledging Article 6 of the Constitution. In my
opinion,
that's
right. They're just forfeiting. But I say that the lawmakers who want out, or myself, if my lawmakers have signed, that they can take it to court and eventually, I assume, to the Supreme Court. And I believe that it would be ruled illegal.
Yeah.
And therefore, they're not bound.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank you very much for that, Annie. Oh, sorry about that. Rich in Benicia, California. You've got a minute to the break, Rich. What's up?
Okay. Hey, Tom. In Oakland, they have the city council against the mayor, and
right.
It's all being pushed by the Chamber of Commerce director in there.
Yep.
And I was told that the Chamber of Commerce, first of all, is not a city organization.
No, it's a private corporation.
A front for right-wing political organizations.
It's theoretically a lobbying agency for business.
Right, right. And they are in the forefront of requesting a recall of Mayor Kwan.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed on TV that other cities, the Chamber of Commerce, and those cities are doing the same thing now. What is your thoughts on them and their anti-progressive?
I think the Chamber of Commerce has become one of the more toxic elements in American society. Back when Lewis Powell wrote his memo in the early 70s, laying out how business needs to fight back against the anti-business elements, he gave it to his best friend, the next-door neighbor, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, and they carried it forward.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And that memo included things like, let's create think tanks, and let's take over the courts, and let's take over the colleges, and let's take over the schools, and let's take over the legislatures. How are they doing it?
In the home of the brave.
Talk media for the rest of us, the Tom Hartman Program. Ken in Lake Havasu, Arizona. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Oh, great. It's a great day at Havasu.
Okay, good. Good.
On the Colorado River. Yeah, I just want to mention about Herman Keem. I've done some research, and I heard a little snippet here the other day that he was the director of the Federal Reserve System in the Atlanta Division.
I thought it was Kansas City, but it may be.
Well, Kansas City, New York. But, you know, he's part of that old money from Europe. The Warburgs, they set up the Federal Reserve.
Well, maybe.
That's why you can't find no information about them.
Yeah.
That's why it's hush-hush, see? And it's really a pathetic deal that's not talked about.
Well, the part of the conspiracy theory that's typically not talked about is the anti-Semitic part of the conspiracy theory that suggests that there's a bunch of Jewish bankers who are trying to control the world. And, A, it's nonsense. And, B, it's the kind of stuff that you know, the white supremacists and the bigots and the Nazis love to go after. And you throw out a name that sounds Jewish and you say, you know, oh, those are the guys who are setting this thing up. And there are lots of good Protestants, you know, the Prescott Bushes of the world and whatnot, who are involved in the banking. It is a multiracial, multi-ethic, and multi-religious, thing, and, you know, regardless of religion or whatever out there. So it's, I'm not going down that road. Drew in New Haven, Vermont. Hey, Drew, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm calling about the Burlington Occupy and the situation that took place yesterday.
Where the vet committed suicide.
Suicide of the soldier.
Yeah.
I appreciate you and Mr. Sanders acknowledging that situation. Nationally, it's not really getting out the door about the real issues around it. But anyway, as a veteran, a Vietnam-era veteran, I'm using you to call on the veterans in the area that there is a vigil tonight at 5 o'clock, and it would be great for them to attend.
Okay, that's in Burlington?
Yes.
Where?
And also, any active duty personnel in the area of Burlington, which there is a base, Camp Johnson, it would be great to have an active duty people actually present and carry the colors to do this.
I think that's illegal, isn't it, Drew?
To this soldier.
I think that's illegal.
It is?
I believe that an active duty soldier is forbidden while on active duty, or at least while in uniform, from participating in anything that might be interpreted as political.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm sort of going on the route that this soldier is still a soldier of us. You know, it's
right.
Like once you sign on to be a soldier, it's like forever.
Right. So make it entirely about the soldier. But if there's a perception of an affiliation with the Occupy movement, I think, you know, I'm certainly not a JAG officer. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But
I think this is pretty much outside of the Occupy situation there, because they're not allowed to be in that area. But there is a vigil at the top of the park there tonight.
Okay.
My feeling is that we should honor all our veterans so that we're not recreating the Vietnam situation of ignoring those who, you know, didn't do as well as others coming out.
Yeah,
so.
who returned. And the same thing happened with Korean War vets, by the way.
Yeah, I think we could make a change here. We're all after a big change now with all that we're doing. I think this would be a good one for veterans.
Yeah, okay.
And for the military.
Drew, well said. Thank you very much for the call and for the shout-out. Jim in Worcester, Mass. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thank you.
Recently, we've been getting bombarded with Michael Jackson trial. Now it's Penn State. Last week, I read on page 8, a little article about Netanyahu. They have a new missile, and he was trying to convince his cabinet to bomb Iran. And recently, I see people about this new report, Iran has nuclear weapons, the same hype that led us up to the war. But you don't see anything about this on the media, that the Israelis want to bomb Iran. This could start World War III. All we see is Michael Jackson.
I would be astounded.
What's your take on that?
Yeah. Well, I would be astounded if the Israelis, first of all, if they used nuclear weapons on anybody, I'd be astounded. But, you know, unless they were full-out attacked. Secondly, my sense of it is that the pressure to bomb Iran is coming from the military-industrial complex, wholly-owned subsidiary war hawks in the United States. Virtually all of the people who have never served in the military, and the neocons and that bunch, and it's Iraq all over again. I mean, Iran is a modern society. It is a modern nation. Look at photos of downtown Tehran. I mean, take one of the online views of there are some great slideshows out there that show you what Iran and the young people in Iran. I mean, they're The old guard is not going to survive forever, and the repressive old guard and the religiously repressive old guard is not going to survive forever. And nations are pushing for India has nukes, Pakistan has nukes, Israel has nukes, all these other countries, and France has nukes, England has, on it goes. I don't frankly think that Iran having nuclear capability is that big a deal, and I realize that makes right-wingers hysterical to hear anybody in the United States say that. And B, it's certainly not a big enough deal for us to go to war over, and I'd be really astounded if Israel did. But, I've been astounded before. Who knows? We'll see. Paul in Irvine. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Happy anniversary and happy Veterans Day.
Thank you.
Can you hear me okay?
Just fine.
Okay. I was really inspired. I was really happy that a lot of people chose to move their money from financial institutions to credit unions. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we should just have like one day for that. They called that, it was November 5th, I believe, right?
Yeah.
When people chose to do that and about more than $4 billion was moved. And that's great. But, I live here in Southern California and there is a way, if I may, there are two great credit unions that people can move their money to.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody in Southern California has somebody who works at Disneyland, there's a Partners Credit Union and, that's a good credit union. And also Schools First is a teacher's credit union. If a student goes to Cal State, all you have to do is be related to a college student. And you can move your money from Bank of America, Chase, Wells Fargo. If you're not happy with them,
yeah.
I invite everyone to continue doing that.
And you know, the thing that
mm-hmm.
I noticed that's got me scratching my head, Paul, is uh-huh. that the amount of money that was moved is in the billions if you look over the last year or the last 12 months. And I don't think that's people like you and me moving our 401ks or I don't have one, but, you know, moving our savings accounts or our checking accounts into credit unions. I think that there are people, some very wealthy people in the United States and or institutions who are looking at the big six, too big to fail banks in the United States and thinking, you know, look at the way every single Republican candidate is talking. You know, if the banks are in trouble, don't bail them out, let them go down. And they're looking at FDIC insurance covers the first, what, 250,000, I think, or 225,
right.
whatever it is. And these
right.
are people who are sitting on maybe $1 million, $5 million, $50 million in assets, $100 million in assets. And they're thinking, maybe it's not such a good idea to have this money in a bank, in a big commercial bank anymore. And so
it's a lot like they become nuclear power plants. You were the one who taught me that only the government insures nuclear power plants, or kind of
right.
or pays to get them there, because banks don't see a way to
right. Wall Street won't do
not,
it.
Right.
Right. Wall Street
so,
won't do
no,
it. And
no, banks are the new nuclear power plants.
Right. So they may well be. And I'm just wondering how many of these people who are moving their money are not just people, movement people, or people who are doing it for ideological reasons, but serious mm-hmm. investors, very serious wealthy people who are saying, you know, I'm not sure that I trust the banking system in the United States anymore, it, or the world for that matter. And community
right.
credit unions, there is a certain level of insurance, but the biggest level of insurance is the fact that they're run by the people who put their money into them. So you don't have CEOs walking off with multi-million dollar salaries. You don't have corporate jets. You don't have big, you know, bonuses for the senior executives, all that kind of stuff. I think that may be a piece of it. Paul, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Tom in Holyoke, Colorado. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Well, hey, Tom, my question was about Vietnam.
Hmm?
I know that they called it a conflict or the police action.
Right.
And I was wondering that because I saw a special that said that it was paid for out of Social Security and then an IOU was put back in. And I was wondering if that IOU had ever been covered.
Yeah, that's true and it's not true. Social Security has to invest their money. Social Security fund is sitting on $2 trillion, $2.5 trillion. They have to invest their money in something. So what they do instead of buying stocks or bonds on Wall Street, which would be a disaster, is they buy treasuries, U.S. treasuries. Anybody who buys U.S. treasuries is essentially loaning money to the federal government. So then the federal government uses that money for whatever it uses it for. So you could argue that, you know, Social Security money was used to pay for the Vietnam War or the Iraq War, for that matter. You could equally argue that Social Security money was used to pay for roads. But the fact of the matter is that it's just a loan. It's going to come back to Social Security. So that's where there's really no truth to that argument at all.
They didn't name it the Vietnam conflict or the Vietnam police action.
No, that was to get around the War Powers Act. That was to get around, or not the War Powers Act, to get around the Constitution, which says that the only way you can have a war is if Congress declares it. And Congress
right.
never declared a war. And Lyndon Johnson didn't want to declare a war. He didn't want to have to deal with all the legalities of a declared war. And so after the Gulf of Tonkin, he got a congressional resolution for a conflict, which I think was wrong. Thank you, Tom, for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
But Vietnam and all these other conflicts, none of them had to do with Social Security. And Social Security's not in trouble. It's doing just fine. Thank you very much. 45 minutes, man.
Come, you masters of war. Here that build the big guns. Here that build the death planes. Here that build all the bombs. Here that hide behind walls. Here that hide behind disks. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. That's the other side, you know, of war. We want to honor our veterans, you know, just good, well-intentioned people who take, frankly, lousy pay to put their lives on the line for this country. And then you look at what's going on. I can drive. I'm broadcasting here from Washington, D.C. I can drive just, you know, 15 minutes out of town into the suburbs of Virginia, where you've got these multi-million-dollar mansions that are the defense contractors. And I think we need to be honoring our veterans more and our defense contractors less. Not sure quite how to say that other than just to bluntly say it. Mark in Portland. I raised this question about Portland yesterday, but all our lines were slammed all day long. They are right now as well. And so a lot of Portland people didn't get through. It's good to see that some of you are now. Mark, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Well, as far as the conundrum about the homeless in the Occupy Portland, the homeless are all around us anyway. The only difference is now they're all in one spot. They've got food there. They've got a tarp to sleep under, blankets to sleep under.
Medical services.
Sleeping on the park benches.
Right.
And for as far as the overdoses go, instead of having them overdosing under the bridges where nobody sees them until they've been dead for a while, now they're overdosing where somebody could possibly get them help before they're dead.
But that all argues for an increased focus on municipal services, increased funding for municipal services, for caring for people. I mean, we do have a growing number of people who are homeless because they just got screwed by the economy. You know,
right.
they lost their jobs and they lost their homes. But we also have to acknowledge that there is a portion of the homeless population, and it's probably the majority of the homeless population. At least what I see when I, you know, there's a homeless shelter that I walk by every day.
I'm at work and I got to go right now.
Oh, that's okay.
Isn't that what Occupy Portland is about?
Okay, you got it, Mark. Thank you. What did I miss? He said he's at work and he's got to go. Okay, Mark, thank you for the call. But at one level, the Occupy movements are all about, you know, hey, let's help each other out. On the other hand, I think that, you know, we're looking at, I don't want to call it a political movement. It's, you know, it is a, but it is. I mean, it's in as much as it's trying to affect change at the level of legislation and the nature and form of our government. That's political. And I would just find it really, really difficult to be running a homeless shelter and providing care to addicts and schizophrenics and also, you know, families who have their own unique needs, who have been kicked out of their houses, while I'm trying to change the political system at the same time. And I really honor the Occupy folks all around the country, in Portland and in everywhere, who are saying, you know, okay, we'll try and take on the whole thing. It's a challenge. It's a big challenge. JD in Napa, California. Hey, JD, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thank you for taking my call, and congratulations on you and your beautiful wife's anniversary today.
Thank you.
I just want to mention on this very topic, this is more a social justice movement than a political movement, and the way I'm viewing it.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happening with this, with clearly elements of people homeless and homeless veterans and families, and there's been so many more, as you've mentioned, lately. And it's all, you know, for most of us, it's 30 days away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or 60 or 90, whatever. But we're there. We're going to be there, many of us, if we can't get this cleaned up,
right,
you know, before 30 to 60 days.
Yeah.
And we're not going to get any help from the Congress.
Hey, you got something
so
like a...
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tom. Anyway, what I want to express here is that this is clearly a movement that is going to reveal to us as a society all of the ills on the bottom level where we all live that we don't want to look at.
Yeah.
Like that gentleman was saying before about the people, yeah, fine if they die under a bridge. And my heart just broke about this young man who killed himself. At least I thought, because yeah, I have battled suicidal depression in my early life. And I know that at least he was around people who did have some concern in their heart.
Yeah.
There's no place. Nobody can take you back from that place. It is just that kind of a place.
Yeah.
And I just thank these people. I pray for them. I ask for more courage on their part because their hearts are going to be broken.
Yeah,
it is ours. We have to look at this, Tom.
No, yes, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. And the notion that it's a social justice movement, not a political movement, I'm not sure you can disentangle the two. And although I acknowledge the importance of not, you know, for example, Martin Luther King never came out and said that he was Republican, Democratic, you know, always avoided partisan politics. But
right.
He was very much about getting the laws changed. And the only way you can do that is in America is through our political system and not party politics system, but through
right.
the elected officials. And I'm lacking a word for that.
Well, yeah, I understand. But see, when we talk about social justice, that is the foundation for government.
Yes. Well, it's the foundation for the existence,
the
rationale for the existence of government.
Exactly. Otherwise, government has proven what it is today. It's useless and it's ungovernable.
Well, to some extent. I mean, government is still doing many good things here in the United States and many bad things as well. Our wars in the bad things category are our postal service and to some extent, you know, certainly our educational system. It's just they're so under attack by the right wingers and the people who don't think that government can do anything or should do anything. But, you know, thank you for the call. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, Thomas Jefferson put into the Declaration of Independence. We the people, the first three words of the Constitution. This is essentially movement stuff. That's not political stuff.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to Anything Goes Friday. Here's another possible. One of the things that we've talked about today is signing Grover Norquist's pledge not to raise taxes, which is one of the constitutional powers granted to Congress. Congress has the duty to lay taxes, tariffs, imposts, whatever. Article 1, Section 8. Back and find the exact language, but that's right there, right? Okay, Section 778. Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, and to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. There's that word. Okay, so if you sign a pledge to not do what the Constitution says is part of your job description, is the person who is asking you to sign that pledge putting themselves above the Constitution? Are they basically, you know, is Grover Norquist basically elevating himself to the level of king? And if so, does he come into conflict with Section 9 of the Constitution, titled Powers Forbidden to Congress, which says Section 8, Article 9, we must still be in Article 1, yes. This is Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 8. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of the Congress except of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatsoever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Has Grover Norquist set himself up as a king? Are these people signing treaties with a foreign state? I realize I'm stretching it a little bit. I saw this today on Daily Kos. This is hysterical. David Waldman writing, Tea Party suckers find out trickle-down economics is a scam, file lawsuit. And it's in the Tennessean. A group of conservative investors in Tennessee is suing a California businessman for allegedly conning them into investing in Tea Party HD, a TV channel aimed at Tea Partiers that turned out to be a scam. Well, is it a scam or not? A court is going to have to figure this out, because basically what this guy did was he said, hey, you can invest in Tea Party HD, Tea Party TV, and then he paid himself enormous amounts of money, put his family members on the payroll, paid them a lot of money. Isn't that how business is supposed to run if it's completely unregulated? I mean, if you're a Tea Partier and you think that business people and the free market, as it were, should simply regulate everything, or should make their own rules, and whoever was running this Tea Party HD TV made his own rules. His company, by the way, was called Heads and Tails, Inc. Maybe as in heads I win, tails you lose? I don't know. But in any case, I think it's kind of sad. Poor Bill Hemrick and Anthony Loacano founded this thing. But Hemrick apparently is the guy who's suing, because Loacano never put his money into the project, but use the funds as his personal bank account. So Tea Partier gets ripped off by Tea Partier. But is it a ripoff? Or is paying the CEO an absurd salary not a ripoff? I don't know. Ask anybody who owns stock in healthcare, Wells Fargo, Bank of America. Your choice. Anyhow, Sam is on the line in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Sam, the last I heard from you, you were about to go under the surgeon's knife. How are you?
I'm doing much better now.
Good, good.
They said they got it, okay?
Baruch Hashem. Thank God. That's great.
It was colon cancer.
Oh, my. Well, I'm glad.
They got every drop of it. That's what he said.
That's wonderful.
And, you know, the Constitution and Declaration of Independence, all these beautiful forms of literature was wrote for the American people to look at and know that they meant something. They just wasn't stuck on a piece of paper to take advantage of somebody.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be justice for all. That word justice means, you know, justice, just what it says.
Yeah.
And...
And Sam, you're recovering from surgery, and it sounds like maybe you've got a few painkillers in you. You just kind of faded off there.
I just ate a half of one.
Okay. All right. But Sam, I want to, thank you for the call. Thanks for letting us know how you're doing.
Petition.
Say what?
Petition. I went out on the street and getting your petition for you. Okay.
Okay. Great. Great. Sam, keep in touch and keep us up to date on how you're doing.
I'm going to get your book. I'm going to send $100 for your book.
Okay. All righty. Thanks a lot, Sam. That's a contribution to Free Speech TV. They're doing a fundraiser and they're giving away books. Thank you, Sam. And so glad to hear that you're well. And thank you for calling into the program. Dan in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for this second opportunity to get on the air with you. And congratulations on your wedding anniversary today.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thanks to Louise, actually.
Okay.
Thanks to Louise, actually, putting up with me all these years.
That's a combined effort.
Yeah, actually, Pacific, I sent a note to our kids, and one of my kids sent me back a note saying it's not 11:11 a.m. because we were married at 11:11 a.m. and it is now 11:11 a.m. on the West Coast. It's actually 11:12 a.m. on the West Coast right this minute. So happy anniversary, Louise, West Coast time.
Wow.
Back to you, Dan.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah.
On this auspicious day today, it's also called the prompting or a change in consciousness and perception. So I would like to offer a new idea that maybe consciousness and perception would feed into and make it stronger.
Okay.
And that is, we need to become a union of citizens. And my idea, if I had my own show, is to get people to donate $25 a week and then create jobs or franchises and put them in different communities like oil refineries and such things for the local people to have their own access and control and cleanup responsibility.
Right.
And also my idea is to create oxygen tanks for the cars instead of a turbine feeding pure oxygen like a welder for an acetylene torch. That would be a sealed system. It wouldn't get dirty. You'd get complete burn. You could also have cannulas, air going to the people in the vehicles to stay alert and happy. And mm-hmm. this isn't going to happen from any politician who has to take corporate dollars and kind of play down under to their control.
No, Dan, you got to invent it. You're, and I wish you good luck in getting your patent on that and getting it out there. It's an idea. I mean, there's a million great ideas, and that's a good one. Mark in Mark Taylor Canfield in Seattle. Hey, you have an Occupy Seattle update, Mark?
Yeah, unfortunately, Tom, it looks like things are changing in Portland and Seattle. The mayor gave the Occupy Portland people until Sunday to leave the public.
Actually, Saturday midnight, Sunday morning.
Saturday midnight. Yeah. Well, here in Seattle, unfortunately, the president of Seattle Central Community College is now asking Occupy Seattle to leave the campus, and the reason that he cited in the media last night was that there were two hand washing dispensers that were broken in one of the bathrooms, which I guess, you know, tends to happen regardless of whether Occupy Seattle is there or not. So it sounds a little bit like he's getting some political pressure from somewhere to oust us from the campus.
You're talking about one of the bathrooms of the buildings on campus that that overflow people are using because it's a bathroom.
Yeah, and we have, you know, 6 or 7 porta potties that we're paying for, so I really don't know what the issue is, but it just came up, and I'm really shocked actually to hear him speaking in the media like that. The problem, I guess, for him is that they found a loophole in the state college regulations, which do not prohibit camping on a college campus.
Right.
So he may have a hard time actually using the law to get us to leave the campus. We're really shocked that
it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. Mark, thanks for the call and thanks for the update. Good to hear from you. 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Back with more of your calls on Anything Goes Friday. And Grover Norquist, by the way, blaming Democrats for blocking a tax increase because they want a tax increase, as they say over at the Daily Kos. Your media support group for We the People. Tom Hartman here with you. Welcome back. Susan in Topeka, Kansas. Hey, Susan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, I was wondering about bringing AIG, Goldman Sachs, all the people that perpetrated a fraud and made the failure of this country happen, and the world. I mean, look at Greece. We're protecting Goldman Sachs and a whole bunch of other idiots from the international community. And why are we doing that? If I perpetrated a fraud like that, I'd be in jail. And there are laws that say if a corporation perpetrates a fraud, that you can pierce the veil of the corporation and take the assets of those that run the corporation that made money on the fraud and return it to the government, the people, or whomever they defrauded.
Yes.
Why aren't we doing that?
Damn good question. I can't speak on behalf of the administration, the Bush administration, or the Obama administration, and it would have to be initiated at the level of the executive branch of government, which is the administration. So I can't speak on their behalf. I can say that, in my opinion, money buys a lot, and that we have in the United States, and frankly Europe does as well, we have two justice systems. If, you know, somebody in California where they've got a 3 strikes and you're outlaw, has twice been busted for shoplifting and the third time snatches a pizza off somebody's plate sitting next to them and ends up in prison for the rest of their lives, that's the criminal justice system for ordinary people. But here you have Bank of America. Now they're doing another settlement right now with the federal government. and, you know, multiple crimes. Most of these companies have been convicted of, admitted to, or settled on, in some cases, hundreds of crimes over the course of the lifetime that they've been around. And their executives as well. You know, they were the ones who made the decisions and perpetrated the crimes. And so what we're seeing in the United States is that we have one kind of justice for the 99% of us, and there's another kind of justice for those people in the 1%, which is not all of the 1%. Keep in mind, more than 63% of the 1%ers want their own taxes to be raised and want a more just society. But this minority, this psychopathic minority within the 1% who exploit power and money and connections, seem to have basically immunity. And I think that is what the Occupy Wall Street movement, the 99% movement, is pointing out and needs to be. And it's marvelous that it's happening. And it needs to be more of a part of the political dialogue in this country on an ongoing basis. Susan, thank you for the call and for mentioning that. Elise in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Elise, what's up? Elise?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm a retired Air Force officer and retired about 5.5 years ago. And I want to say Happy Veterans Day to all of my fellow brothers and sisters out there and those still serving, and our good thoughts are with them.
Amen. And thank you for your service to our country. It is dangerous work at crummy pay, and I honor you for it.
But I have to say, it was the best bloody thing I've ever done in my life.
Well, that's great.
But here's where my issue is starting to come into play. We start talking about all these cuts where the congressional delegations are trying to do to save money and do all this other stuff, and now they're starting to try to attack our military retirement benefits.
Yep.
And we went in with a contract. And we said, okay, we're going to serve our country. We're going to do what you want us to do. And we're going to be the best damn person we can at it, right?
Yep.
And so now we come out, and so now they're saying, okay, you shouldn't get your retirement until you're of retirement age, whatever that means. But they didn't give us any overtime. They don't give us compensation while we're there. I mean, most of us are working, you know, 14 to 17 hours a day.
Yep.
For stretches.
Well, arguably, you're working 24/7 because you can be called out anytime.
Which we were.
Yeah.
Here's my bigger issue. Why aren't we talking about the congressional delegation retirement? These folks serve 5 years, and they get 3 to 4 times or 5 times as much money as any of us see after 20-plus years of service. Yeah. Where would we go where people don't like us?
Yeah, Congress has a very, very nice and very healthy pension system, and if the Republicans in the House of Representatives want to privatize Social Security, they want to privatize the pension system for the elderly in the United States, and if they want to privatize, turn to 401ks, the military pension system, why don't they start with their own?
That's my point exactly. It's not, and the first thing they're going to say is, it's just a drop in the bucket. There's only 400-plus of us, so that's really not going to make a lot.
Right.
But the issue is, if they start adding up these drops in the bucket, you now have bucketfuls.
Well, I think it's a symbolic issue, too. And what it does is it points out the hypocrisy of so many of those in Congress, and particularly the Republican Party, which is spearheading these movements to try to basically privatize everything in sight, including the military retirement plan. Elise, I've got to move along, but thank you for the call. Thank you for making a great point, and thank you for your service to our country. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Colleen in Sebastopol, California. Hey, Colleen, what's up?
Well, happy anniversary, Mr. and Mrs. Hartman.
Thank you.
And I am pleased to have good news for you about Occupy's next steps after just a somber mention on Veterans Day in honor of my father, who's deceased Lieutenant Colonel from the United States Air Force, served in the Vietnam occupation, as it wasn't a declared war. And he suffered cancer from the effects of Agent Orange and took his life at the end of that. So, but the good news that I have in my service...
Very quickly, please, Colleen. We're almost out of time.
The solidarity for the Occupy movement needs to happen with the city halls to restore their funding. And so Santa Rosa and Sebastopol have both are working on permits for what they're calling camping. But I'm saying this is the art of our free speech.
Mm-hmm.
This is a living art installation in this assembly, and it's working here, and it's kind of in contrast to the sad things of our neighbors in Oakland.
That's great.
So,
that's great.
Yeah.
And that's good news. Colleen, thank you. And working with the city hall, working with the elected officials. Great idea. I'll just leave it at that. I think you said it very elegantly. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can drop by our live chat room, which runs 24-7. Build a blog, build message boards, TomHartman.com. I'm not quite sure how that was a veteran song, Jacob. It didn't quite work out. Anyhow, welcome back. And in honor of our veterans, my father was in the occupation of Japan after Occupy. There it is. Welcome to Occupy the Airwaves. Jacob came up with that this morning, although this is quite different from an occupation movement. But I suppose there are some parallels, but... in any case, my dad was in the occupation of Japan. My grandfather fought in World War I. So, anyway, 866-987-THOM, our telephone number. Andrew in Chicago. Hey, Andrew, what's up?
Hi. I just wanted to mention that I think there's a bigger issue with Governor Perry's fumble earlier this week. I think it's a bit crazy that he wants to eliminate an entire administration or agency and can't remember what it is.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think there'd be so many different issues that would make you want to eliminate it.
Right.
How would you forget?
The way the media is playing this is that he had a senior moment or whatever, you know, he lost track of something. But I think that what everybody really understands and nobody is saying out loud is that if you believe in something in your guts, if you really are passionate about something, you don't forget. You know, you may forget some of the nuance or the details or whatever, but if you're really passionate about doing away with the Department of Energy, and I don't know why he wants to do away with the Department of Energy. They make bombs. I thought Republicans loved the Department of Energy. But anyhow, if he wants to do away, maybe he thinks the Department of Energy has something to do with energy in the United States and doesn't realize that they were, you know, they kind of changed the name when they started making bombs. So that, but whatever. If he wants to do away with that and commerce and whatever the other one was, I can't. But
commerce and education.
No, I know. Yeah. But I was trying to make a bad joke. The point is that if he really had that in his belly, he wouldn't have done that. What he was doing was revealing that somebody sat down and wrote up some talking points for him or came up with a policy for him and said, "Here, Governor, memorize this," and like a fifth grader trying to memorize his vocabulary words or something, he missed one. And
exactly.
and that he wasn't speaking out of a place of passion. And I think that's going to do him more harm, not just with his base, but with all American voters. And the fact that Herman Cain, who has this total wackadoodle plan of, you know, let's take the Koch brothers and drop them from 35% income tax rate down to 9% tax rate. And let's take, you know, people who work as greeters at Walmart who are just barely getting by and they're living in poverty and eating cat food and making and not paying federal income taxes and living at the poverty rate. Let's jack their taxes up to 9%. Herman Cain is actually getting honored by these people. Well, why? Because he has at least the courage of his convictions. He's willing to say, this is it. This is mine. This is where I stand. You may think it's crazy. You may disagree with it. You can poke holes in it all day long. But damn it, this is where I stand. And that's people, and I don't think it's just Americans. I think that this is an absolutely universal human trait, that people want leaders who have convictions. People want, you know, they want politicians who believe in something. They may disagree with it, but at least they believe in it. And so you know where they stand. And this is why Mitt Romney is so toxic on the Republican side, is because he's been all over every single issue in the course of his life. And it's why... it's why I think that this is what Bernie and I were talking about in the first hour, that if the Democrats start saying, okay, fine, we're going to cut some out of Medicare and we're going to raise the retirement age of Social Security or change the COLA or whatever, you know, what they're doing is they're saying, we don't really believe in this stuff. We don't have convictions. We don't have, you know, we're just, it's convenient. Well, you know, we kind of like it, but, you know, and that's suicide politically. That's the same thing that Rick Perry did. And so, anyway, Andrew, I totally agree with you. Thank you for calling and letting me get that off my chest. And you did a good job, too. David in San Diego. Hey, David, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I think that the occupiers from Wall Street are wrong. I think they're excluding an entire group or section of the economy out of the equation.
That being?
Oh, the government. You know, think about this.
How about the military-industrial complex?
Well, how about this? The government has $3.8 trillion in financial assets. It's got $12 trillion in oil reserves, and it's got another $12 trillion in gas reserves, not including the $1.3 trillion it has just in buildings. And I'm asking myself, why was someone who has $30 trillion worth of assets is asking me for money? I'm just trying to scratch my head.
Let me do math 101 for you, David. First of all, those oil and gas assets, that's stuff that's under the ground in federal lands. They will lease those things out to private for-profit companies who will pay a fee on that money, on that oil and gas as it's pulled out.
That's
not a liquid asset. That's not something that you can convert tomorrow morning. And they are converting that as fast as they can, by the way, to the extent that they're selling those leases. And that's what Obama just went back to doing with down in the Gulf. So, you know, Republican talking point number one, down. Number two, the federal buildings. You want those buildings what, administered by Marriott for a profit so that the CEO could take a larger paycheck? Wouldn't you rather have your federal buildings? Wouldn't you rather have the infrastructure of the United States, the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Monument? Wouldn't you rather have it administered by an agency that doesn't make a profit?
Well, I would rather have more money in my pocket. And I would rather have, a job.
In that case, then you do not want a for-profit corporation administering the Smithsonian Institution. You do not want a for-profit corporation cleaning the Congress building. And then in addition to paying their workers, whatever they're paying their workers, skimming money off the top to pay their CEOs and skimming money off the top to pass out to their stockholders. So, you know, Republican talking point two goes down in flames. Now, what was the
Hardly. Look, I am concerned with the government sitting on $3.8 trillion worth of assets, and financial assets I'd like to add. In other words, the government is sitting on a bunch.
So you're talking about the Social Security Trust Fund is $2.5 trillion. Where's the other trillion?
Oh, I don't know. I got these numbers from the government.
Well, no, you got these numbers from some right winger, I guarantee, or probably some viral email that's going around on the Fox blogosphere. The Social Security Administration is sitting on $2.7 trillion, and that is parked in treasuries. And that is to pay off obligations incurred by people who paid money into that during their working lives, and it's earning interest.
No. I'm not including that. I'm talking about municipalities. I'm talking about state and local governments. I'm talking about the government as a total, have $3.8 trillion, not including the other $25 trillion in, like I said, oil and gas reserves, and you're sitting there trying to say they're developing it? That's bull. You know what? You got the whole, all of Alaska that's sitting...
David, I'm not going to do magic numbers with you. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for being there. This has been a very difficult week for a lot of people, and I love you as a brother for being there. I know that if we sit at a table, we're both so close together, it's frightening.
But I hear a butt coming, Armin.
But well, anyway, please, my dear brother, we got to get this out. Here's their plan. There's a story on opednews.com, opednews.com.
Yeah, Rob Call's website. It's a great website.
And it's from Bloomberg financial commentator Avery Goodman, mm-hmm. and he reports that Bank of America has shifted $22 trillion worth of derivative obligations from Merrill Lynch and the Bank of America Holding Company to the FDIC Insured Retail Deposit Division, and they already have $53 trillion there that's been specialized for by the taxpayers to be accountable to. So what they're doing, they're setting this whole casino up, this whole Wall Street. They're about ready to absolutely pull the plug, and they're going to destroy all the passbook savings of all the working class Americans and all the people that have jobs or have any equity, they're getting ready to put all their gambling debts and put it on the backs of the people and pull the plug on it. So if they go down, they're setting it up to destroy the whole economy and turn this into this dream, this feudalism.
Well, that's what they already threatened us with, Armin, was that, you know, if we go down, we're going to take the whole country with us. You know, it's one of these, back off or I'll shoot myself in the head things. With regard to collateralized CDOs and derivatives being shifted over to the FDIC, I don't know. I'll have to read that article. My understanding is that the FDIC just covers federally insured deposits, and that it only covers it up to $250,000. So I don't see how they could cover trillions of dollars worth of assets. But I may, you know, there may be something there that I just don't know about. Deidre in Vashon Island, we have a minute to the break. Deidre, what's up?
Hi, thanks, Tom. First, I wanted to give a quick shout out to my 88-year-old mother, who served in the Marine Corps during World War II.
Wow, great.
Yeah. And second, I wanted to build on the call from the woman in California whose city halls are working with the Occupy movements. Mm-hmm. I wonder, I mean, even though obviously an overwhelming influx of homeless people and addicted people are really a challenge and really a problem for the movement, isn't it also maybe an opportunity for the municipalities to pair up and kind of sort of use it as a showcase for the problem of addiction and homelessness in our country?
I think it absolutely would be.
Turn it into an opportunity?
I think it absolutely would be. It would require a commitment to that kind of cooperation on both sides. And,
exactly.
And that's gonna have to come out of each General Assembly, I guess. But good point. Deidre, thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Herman Cain is now number one at 18%. Mitt Romney, 15%. Newt Gingrich, 15%. What's this country coming to?
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to our show director and this extraordinary woman who 38 years ago this day said, I do to me, Louise Hartman, to this is happy anniversary. Thanks to my executive producer, Sean. Yeah, happy anniversary, Louise, from me. To my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producer, Jacob Dean, our video directors, Jim Javinsky, Chris Bryant, Eric Hamilton, to our phone screener, Julie Lulley, our writer-researcher, Sam Sachs, to Alva Goldbook for our video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, to our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum at WID, to everyone at the various companies that syndicate this program, Dial Global, Pacifica Radio, Free Speech TV, Dish Network, DirecTV, all the cable providers who carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, all the others around the country. Monikashvi, Dennis Trunov, Don Rojas, all the other great folks at Free Speech TV on RTTV who work on the big picture. To Rachel in Santa Fe, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to all the folks in our chat room, hey, to Ellen Ratner and all the great folks at the Talk Radio News Service, Jay Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program. Thank you. 866-987-THOM, our telephone number, Robert in Sacramento. Hey, Robert, what's up?
Hi, Tom.
Hey.
I didn't think I was going to get on, so thanks for letting me on. I hope I'll make this brief, and I just wanted to say you mentioned psychopaths, and I think one thing that we can do, I don't really want psychopaths making decisions that affect my life, so I think maybe we need to come up with a definitive test, and we can then find out who the psychopaths are in positions of power and then bar them from those positions of power.
One of the real challenges in the field of psychology, Robert, is that almost by definition, a good psychopath is an extraordinary liar. A good psychopath can beat a lie detector machine. A good psychopath can, you know, they can convince themselves of anything or they can simply be without feelings. And so psychopathology or sociopathy is one of the most difficult things to diagnose any way other than retrospectively. I mean, you can look back at what Tom DeLay did in Congress and say, yeah, you know, go Marianas Islands, all these other things, these things, you know, or you can look back retrospectively at, you know, fill in the blanks and say, this person has, you know, must be a sociopath in order to behave that way. But before you put him in office, it's damn tough. It is just damn tough. But Robert, it would be a great idea. And thank you for the call. My other concern is anytime we start saying we're going to do psychological testing before you get in, then you're handing off to another industry, the psychology industry. They're going to become the gatekeepers to politics. And then I guarantee you the psychology industry would suddenly become politicized and people would figure out a way around and all that kind of thing. Henry in Unadilla, New York?
Unadilla.
Okay. Henry, okay. Thank you.
What I have to say about this with the Occupy situation is when wherever it's happening at, if the mayor or the governor, whoever happens to be the one pulling the strings and says, all right, let's beat them up and get them out of here, scare them.
Right.
And the first thing you should do is start a recall and get rid of that person.
Yeah. I'm absolutely with you. Well said, Henry. Well, yes, actually, let me give you a yes and no on that, because if it's let's beat them up and scare them in, then yes, of course. On the other hand, I think that, you know, Sam Adams in Portland, for example, has really struggled with this. I haven't had any conversations with him about it, but, you know, it just seems. Anyhow, Eric in Jane Lou, West Virginia. Eric, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I'm so glad I was able to finally talk to an intelligent man, sir.
Thank you.
My question is, unless we have to go to war with Iran, when all these returning young soldiers, men and women, including my son and my son-in-law and a whole slew of people, come back home and there are no jobs available to them, do you think that will possibly change the political landscape so we can return to some form of sanity in this country?
I think so. And I think that I don't think that it's an accident of statistics that the two people who've been most severely wounded at Occupy Oakland were both Iraq War vets. My guess is there's a lot of vets who are in these Occupy movements, who are participating in these Occupy movements. Because hey, there's no jobs. They're back. They've got, you know, it's a tough world. And this is one of the things I'm guessing that is weighing on President Obama is, okay, we're going to wind down this war, bring people home, bring them home to what? You know, we've got to get some jobs. So Eric, you've nailed it right on the head and did so very, very well. Thank you. Sherry in Los Angeles. Sherry, we have a minute to the end of the show. What's up?
Okay, happy anniversary to you and Louise. My
Thank
husband
you.
And I met the same day you and Louise were wed.
Oh, isn't that sweet? That's great.
I've been to Occupy LA, and we should petition Obama to open up the VA facilities to homeless vets. There's so many of them, these Occupy movements, and we...
Well, you mean for medical care, homeless vets already have access to VA facilities.
No,
you mean to live in?
There are buildings in L.A. at the VA facility
mm-hmm.
that could be occupied to let them live there.
Interesting.
And there's empty, habitable, empty buildings that
yeah.
could be occupied.
Well, we've got some significant fraction. I forget the percentage, but it's something like, you know, in some cities, it's like in Detroit, it's like, you know, a third or a quarter or something like that. But I think nationally, it's something like 1/12 of all the housing in this country is empty right now. So.
And they lived in tents. Come on, they could make
yeah.
do.
Yeah,
know?
There you go.
Give them a place to live.
There you go, Sherry. Great one. Thank you very much. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, we'll have the latest from the Occupy movement from coast to coast, Portland, Oregon to Portland, Maine, and all points in between. Plus, is the FBI's new GPS device a violation of the Fourth Amendment? And the best of the rest of the news, and always your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program, your media support group for we the people. And don't forget. It all begins with you. Democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag. You're it. Occupy something. We'll see you Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.